JC2S, Part 2.
Number 17A.
All right, so we go on with this sense of love. That's why we can see that Max has as the epitome that this life thrust cannot be held back by professions. Instead of practicing and living the divine precepts, to leave all for Christ. That to leave all for Christ is that life tone which is love. And as you say, yes, that's right, it's a lowercase love, a quality of life. And therefore, we see that this is an interesting point where Dr. Kubler-Ross, I've heard her speak in Seattle at different times, and I'm sure many of you had too. She's the one who has done a lot of work in the medical field on death and dying, and was one of the big pioneers in showing and that there would be perhaps life after death, and how her medical field went against her in those early years, saying she was touching a taboo. She was investigating death, and that you shouldn't do that. That's something she shouldn't do. And she said, well, all she kept saying to herself, when I'm on the other side and they come, I'll just be laughing there, greeting them, that there was life after death after all. But she was a giant in this discovery of life after life. But she, in this book called Courage to Conviction, has an essay in there in which she said that as a young woman, she was spiritually minded. She was Swiss. And as a young woman, she was very spiritually minded, but she said when she went to old theology, the opposite of life here, that all she found was mere profession, just what this tone is saying. And she says she didn't find these living practices on love. She was giving in that book just this tone of life is truth is life. She said she didn't find that love in the preachers to leave all for Christ, that it was just words, 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 words. That she was horrified when the preachers would get up and profess love and speak of love to the congregation and to the children. And then in the backside of the room, literally beat the children if they wouldn't behave. And she said she just couldn't go into a religious field because she saw that what they said and what they do were not one. So that, of course, is true. We see today in the world, in this electronic religion on television, how it is exposed so much. What one says and what one does in old theology isn't always in agreement. It doesn't have the Christ behind it, you see. And the reason the Christ is there, because it isn't the love for Christ. It isn't willing to leave even the most cherished beliefs and practices for the love of the idea. It wants to keep the best of the spoils. So we see that which lets us be willing to leave our most cherished beliefs and practices is the Christ. That's why it says to leave all for Christ. That it's a Christ that makes the words and the works one. We can't do that. We don't make what we say and what we do one. We never could. That's the Saul story, isn't it? That which I should do, I don't do. We all do that. But Saul said he couldn't live only by the laws of the Torah and the Talmud and these Jewish laws. He said that it was impossible, but it was only on the road to Damascus, we know, when he met the Christ idea, that transformed him, and he was able then, as Paul, to leave all for the Christ. He got that love tone, didn't he? He suddenly saw it, but then he went away for 7 years, and then I think 7 years again, to let the Christ transform him from a Saul into a Paul. So the Christ made him do it. And he allowed in those years to let that Christ work on his life. I believe it was 7 years and seven more years, around 14 years, for that love to come out. So it isn't something that is done in a day. It's the Christ does it step by step, brings this out in life practice. So this is what this is all about, that love tone, that leaving all for Christ, and that the Christ makes us do it. The Christ will through its first and second translation, make our words and our works one. We know that. We can't get away from it. So it's a terrific tone for theology, isn't it? Because we know how that's a claim against theology. So it has that Christ is the Christ behind life, truth, and life. Very, very strong, important, imperative point that the Christ brings out here in order that what we have is a true spiritual theology, not an old, dead theology. All right? So we go on and see that life spirit now, which wants to go forward, which even gets rid of our most cherished beliefs and practices through the Christ is the Christ, giving us that love of the Christ so much that we're willing to leave all for the Christ, then that is the attitude. And that is the only attitude which then, at life as truth is truth, has the dominion. It's only that then the channel through which the new theology will come, the new truth consciousness. That constitutes now the next point. That is the consciousness through which then principle will work. That's the attitude through which principle then will crown with the consciousness of the new theology. So we see, therefore, that this life as truth cannot be held back by scholasticism and ecclesiasticism through false channels. So that's the opposite of truth, because scholasticism and ecclesiasticism, she's going to show, are false channels through which the new theology comes, through which that life, spirit is truth, will reveal itself. So let's take a look at that again. She has it in a short text from 1:41:10-26. She says, all revelation, such is the popular thought, must come from the schools and along the line of scholarly and ecclesiastical descent, as kings are crowned from a royal dynasty. In healing the sick and the sinning, Jesus elaborated the fact that the healing effect followed the understanding of the divine principle and the Christ Spirit, which governed the corporeal Jesus. For this principle, there is no dynasty, no ecclesiastical monopoly. Its only God-crowned head is immortal sovereignty. Its only priest is a spiritualized man. The Bible declared that all believers are made kings and priests unto God. The outsider did not then and did not now understand this ruling of the Christ. Therefore, they cannot demonstrate God's healing power. Neither can this manifestation of Christ be comprehended until its divine principle is scientifically understood. Well, let's mark the text, and I will try to hold back the explanation of it to the abstraction because it makes it very clear. But first of all, there's no ecclesiastical monopoly on the side. That means there's no monopoly to the channel through which the Christ will come. So that's the opposite of that channel of truth. So she says, all revelations, such as the popular thought, must come from the schools and along the line of scholarly and ecclesiastical descent, as kings are crowned from a royal dynasty. That's the opposite of the Christ. That's all the opposite of what channel the world thinks is going to come. And it says, in healing the sick and the sinning, Jesus elaborated the fact that the healing effect, because the Christ, that healing, that truth effect, what did that truth effect follow? The understanding of the divine principle, that's principle, and the Christ Spirit, huh? that truth spirit, which is life. Huh? It's that life spirit which is truth. So that would be life which is truth. So the healing effect followed the understanding of the divine principle, and that life which is truth, that life spirit which is truth has that Christ spirit behind it, which governed the corporeal Jesus. From this principle, from this infinite one principle, principle, there is no dynasty, no ecclesiastical monopoly. It's only God-crowned head is immortal sovereignty. Its only priest is the spiritualized man. The Bible declares that all believers are made kings and priests unto God. Let's hold on that, and I'll show what that is in a moment. The outsider did not then and did not now understand this ruling of the Christ. Well, the Christ. Therefore, they cannot demonstrate God's healing power. Well, that demonstration is that based on that understanding of principle, which then lets the Christ as the Christ bring out God's healing power, the sense of the Christ doing that demonstrating power. Neither can this manifestation of the Christ, again the Christ tone, be comprehended until its divine principle is scientifically understood, the principle tone. So there's a lot of Christ in principle in this life is truth tone. And we'll see why. Let's take a look at the abstraction, which will help color your notes too, in the text. So we're seeing then, all right, the main point is how is that life is truth, what channel is it going to come through? So it's using truth as a channel. You see, it has that whole tone of that life is truth as a subtone of truth is bringing out the channel of truth. Christ is going to use its own channel. It's not going to use the channel that the world thinks, that all life truth comes through scholasticism or ecclesiasticism. Those aren't the channels. That's the opposite of that subtone truth. So she's asking as a question, through what life channel comes revelation and healing? That's the Christ. Through what life channel will it come? And she answers, well, not through the channel as popular thought. And then she says what the channels are, the world thinks are the true channels that this life, which is truth, is going to come. That new theology will come. And she says, well, this life power, which is truth, that new living theology is not going to come through the schools, meaning it's not going to come along the line of scholarly descent. It's not going to come along of PhD, passing it to PhD, passing it to PhD, passing it to PhD. That's not the channel through which that life, which is truth, comes. And it's not coming through ecclesiastical descent, as kings are crowned from a royal dynasty, where the mantle in theology is passed from one person, and then it's inherited by the next person, which is then falls on the shoulder of the next person. And within that religion, it is, we know, organization then determines who gets it. That, like within the Catholic Church then, they designate, well, now this is the next pope, and then this is the next pope, and now this person is better than this person, so this person becomes the next pope. And within an organization, they decide amongst the many candidates which one shall be crowned the pope. So they say that it's not as if kings are crowned from a royal dynasty, but the people within the organization decide who the king is going to be. They say that it comes through God's channels. See, we already saw it comes through that channel which has that love, that has that willingness to leave all for Christ. We don't know where that is. We don't know what's in the deep recesses of one's consciousness, whether one really is willing to leave all for Christ. And it's never conscious. I have to keep saying that. We all say we love God. But as Max said, if Jesus came, would we follow him? Probably not, he said. True. We all say, oh, we love the subject. We'll follow it. All those mob rule of beliefs within us don't love God. You see, those negative beliefs. They don't love the Christ. They love the physical explanation of reality. They love now the mental explanation of reality. They love the human explanation of reality that sometimes can mix evil in their life and sometimes can mix good in their life. And so they'll keep the best of the spoil and mix the spiritual with the material worldviews so that there's giants on the earth. That's what they want, popularity in the world. That, therefore, we don't know. See, these beliefs are there, and we don't know if they've been, if we've allowed the Christ to purify us so much that we have that love to leave all for Christ. All of us don't know that. We think consciously we do, but what are those claims against identity that are in that deep? We only know the tip of the iceberg of what we're thinking and say, yes, I would leave all for Christ. But what are those claims that are down there that that may say, but no, you don't, and tempt us with another life experience? And then we say, well, maybe I didn't have enough love to go forward. So we don't know. You can't judge a book by its cover. Regardless of what the cover is like, we don't know what is lingering within the next experience that will try to test us if we're really willing to lead all for Christ. And we've all gone through these experiences that demand us to know if we really are sincere or not. At that point of soul, the tests come. Even Jesus went through those tests. So it isn't up for people to judge the book by its cover and say it says that the Christ knows what that love is, that Christ is the Christ comes, and if it finds agreement, then it says it uses that channel. That's that David story, huh? That the people, Saul was chosen from a personal basis to be the leader. He didn't make the grade. He didn't have that love to leave all for God. So God chose, principle chose David, who was shepherding the sheep and was within his consciousness, willing to leave all for the Christ, to give everything back to principle. So this is important, because we know that we don't know within ourselves if we it's not personal. It doesn't mean that somebody is going to come along to lead on the idea. As we've already seen, it takes the grass roots to lead on the idea. But it's within ourselves. Do we have the capacity to be transparent enough to, in holistic reasoning, to do our job as a drop of water to carry on ship? The ocean liner, huh? Are we willing to do that within our consciousness? So she says, therefore, for this principle there is no dynasty, no ecclesiastical monopoly. And then she gives this wonderful point of this hierarchy, really. She says, as I said, for this principle there is no dynasty, no ecclesiastical monopoly. And then she says, its only crowned head is immortal sovereignty. Its only priest is the spiritualized man. The Bible declares that all believers are made kings and priests unto God, saying that it is everyone is going to be made a king and priest unto God. Not just one person is going to be crowned pope. See, it goes completely against Catholicism here. The mob rule choosing the next king, the pope. It shows no at that. So that's where it's only God-crowned head is immortal sovereignty, is showing that level of divine science. That it's not a pope that is the God-crowned head, but divine science, a consciousness of divine science. That is the only God-crowned head. That is immortal sovereignty. That consciousness which is at work in the living principle love, that is that God-crowned consciousness. Not anybody. It's a consciousness which is crowned. The cross and the crown, huh? That's Mrs. Eddy. We pick up the cross and we all wear the crown, not one person. As she says, therefore, the God-crowned head is immortal sovereignty. It's that crown consciousness of divine science. And then she says, it's only priest is the spiritualized man. That's absolute Christian Science. That man, which has the consciousness, that God-crowned consciousness of the living calculus, of the divine infinite calculus, those are the priests. Not people are priests, chosen priests. Again, going against Catholicism. But the real priests are all mankind that has the God-crowned consciousness of accepting that they are the divine infinite calculus. That's that real sense of priests or nuns. And then the Christian Science level, the Bible declares that all believers are made kings and priests unto God. Therefore, that goes against, therefore, old theology that says that some make it and some don't. Some are inherent sinners and they're swallowed up in hell. And that the only a few, maybe 144,000, are going to make it. You see, that's the belief that some make it and some don't. But she says here on the level of Christian Science that all believers are kings and priests of God. And how do they do it? They are made kings and priests of God. They are made to be the living followers of the Christ Spirit. See, that's that Christian Science level. That the Bible declares that all believers are made kings and priests unto God, meaning that all believers are made to follow the Christ example. And so that goes back and saying, all right, therefore, that we then can wear the crown of theology. Therefore, that if we let the Christ is the Christ come and purify our lives, as it showed at the life is truth, is life tone, to have that love to leave all for the Christ, for God, for the true concept of theology, and to have that which lets us do it, which is a consciousness of divine science. If we are at work in divine science with a consciousness of the allness of God, hence the awful unreality called evil, that it's with that truth consciousness, which is always entertaining, as I said, the allness of the ideas of God, the allness of God, that God is all in all, that consciousness is the priest. That consciousness translates it down to where we are the priest. We are that living, divine, infinite calculus. We consciously accept, thought accepts that we are that divine, infinite calculus. And therefore we are made kings and priests unto God. We are then made to follow the Christ example. So she's showing that real church, which exists in consciousness, which is the channel through which this idea is coming, is that church consciousness, is that living principle love consciousness, is that dimensional consciousness. That's how she defined church, isn't it? And she says, with that living consciousness of the true church, that is the channel through which God operates. So that's the crown. That's crowned. And will be the head of the new theology. All right, now let's just go on to finish this tone of truth. Life is truth is love. And says, well, all right, then we see then that this life is truth, this healing Christ spirit cannot even be subdued by the neglect of Christian Science, by pulpit, press, and institutes of learning. Quite wonderful. So we see it's going to happen in spite of everything, even neglect. So neglect is the opposite of love, that which doesn't accept or welcome that new theology of Christian Science. So let's read it. 141:27. The adoption of scientific religion and of divine healing will ameliorate sin, sickness, and death. Let our pulpits do justice to Christian Science. Let it have fair representation in the press. give to it the place in our institutions of learning, now occupied by scholastic theology and physiology. And it will eradicate sickness and sin in less time than the old systems devised for subduing it have required for self-establishment and propagation. So a change demanded, that's always the Christ. It's a change demanded. A change is the Christ and the demands of the Christ in the marginal heading. So the adoption we would color in our love tone, because that is the acceptance, love. That's a point of the synonymous term love with a capital L. So the acceptance of the new theology, scientific religion, life, of the divine healing will, that's always the Christ, ameliorate. Well, we'll see that that is a sense also of the Christ truth. So the acceptance of this new theology will, Christ, ameliorate truth, sin, sickness, and death. Let, huh? Life. Let there be. Let it happen. Let the pulpits, let theology accept. Now it's going to say, this is all under the life which is love tone. Let theology, let the pulpits do justice to Christian Science. Is this saying, let theology accept Christian Science? And then she just says, what will happen if theology accepts Christian Science? If you let it have fair representation and give to it the place in our institutions of learning now occupied by scholastic theology and physiology, what will happen if that is accepted? Then the Christ, eradicate love totally, huh? Sickness and sin in less time, life, than the old systems of theology had devised for subduing them, have required for self-establishment and propagation. So let's go on and take a look at the abstraction, which will help with the coloring here.